Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Nampak pre-close period call. All participants are currently in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Eric and Glenn. Please go ahead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Eric Smit speaking. So I assume most of you are dialing in from home. I guess across the world, most people are either in lockdown or self-isolation. So I think very abnormal circumstances that all of us are experiencing at the moment. But I guess all of us are getting used to it at speed. So I take it all of you have gone through the SENS announcement that we've sent out, so I'm not going to go through it in detail, but I'm still going to run through the key details in there. And so maybe to start off with, I'll go through the market conditions in our major economies, and at the same time, to a large extent, give a divisional update as well where appropriate. We'll obviously also discuss the decline in trading income from Angola, which is a key issue. We'll later on go through the proceeds from the disposable, notably our glass operation and Cartons Nigeria. Then we'll address liquidity in our rest of African businesses, specifically Angola and Nigeria. We'll talk about the relaxation of the covenants, COVID-19, of course, and generally the theme of the reservation of cash given the COVID-19 pandemic. So what I would like to do is I'm going to start with the market conditions in our major economies and to some extent the divisional update. So the first market I would like to discuss this time around is not South Africa. I'm going to talk to Angola first because I think that is probably where we've seen the key movement in this particular period. First of all, I think as you would have seen just subsequent to our year end, at the end of September, there was quite a notable devaluation. So during the period, and of course we today only talking about essentially the period up to the end of February, although, as you would have seen in the SENS announcement, we also mentioned some of the key issues that happened during March. So up to the end of February, we've seen a 32% devaluation in the Kwanzaa. That's obviously put additional pressure on the disposable income or affordability of people in Angola. And as a result, we have seen a further decrease in our beverage can volumes. And as a direct consequence, our trading income, we have disclosed this as at near break-even levels. So clearly, very little trading income we can expect from that market from the period. But at the same time, if we look at the cash balances we have in country, we can report that 56% of that is currently hedged. We have disclosed the numbers in the tables in the trading update. But to give you an idea about, so like we say, just over half that cash is hedged in US dollar linked Kwanza bonds. And clearly we had very good extraction of cash out of Angola as well. So at this point, there's actually quite a low value of bonds still left in country. Then Nigeria, I think just two issues to mention there. First of all, I think the demand for beverage cans has remained strong, so we still have growth there. And other than that, is probably mentioning that cash levels are at optimal levels, so we don't have a big exposure of monetary items there. Of course, if there's a devaluation, which we expect, by the way, for the coming period, I think we have done everything possible to reduce the cash exposure, but of course your normal working capital will be exposed to any potential devaluation. Next market is Zimbabwe. The economy continues to contract. As you know, the Zimbabwean dollar devalued by up to 18% to the end of February. During March, it suddenly devalued further to 25 Zim dollars to the US dollar, which is where it's also now pegged. But I think it's worth noting that Nampak has not provided any cash into that country since April 2018. All purchases of raw materials are funded by dollars, etc., that we get from our customers. Essentially, Zimbabwe is the only country where we experience significant problems in obtaining forex, clearly not Angola and also not Nigeria, although Nigeria is definitely tightening and it's getting more difficult. Then if I return to our main market, South Africa, I don't think I need to say much about the current state of the South African economy. It is clearly a very challenging trading environment. Traditionally, over the holiday season or up to the end of December is our peak period for trading, and needless to say, the economy was very weak. Of course, the COVID-19 has turned this economy on its head, and I'm sure it's going to do the same for everywhere in the world. As you would have heard, South Africa has gone into a 21-day lockdown, as announced by the president, and that's effective from 26th of March. I have to mention that most of our products are considered essential products or services. Therefore, most of our factories are still allowed to run. We have implemented business continuity plans throughout our businesses, basically to ensure that we minimize the impact on our employees. Clearly, the health of our employees is a key concern. We're also ensuring continuity of supply to our customers. After a detailed risk assessment, we are quite happy that our inbound supply chain is secure. We've got adequate raw materials, so there's very little concern at this stage on that front. Of course, on the demand side, I think that is the big unknown. We're not sure what is going to happen, and obviously that will only get clearer during the second half of our financial year. What we can say is that we expect demand for beverage cans to be impacted negatively, mainly due to the ban on the sale of alcoholic products, and clearly a lot of the cans that we produce is for the alcoholic market. On the other side, we do expect that the food may inadvertently benefit from a short-term spike in demand for food cans, but we do not expect that to last too long, and I don't think it will have a material impact on the results. If I move on to specific divisional updates, if we look at Bevcan, in South Africa, Bevcan continue to defend our market share. I think we've done pretty well under the circumstances. Yes, we have lost some market share, but I think it's fair to say probably less than we expected. But the negative was due to the overall South African economy, overall demand for beverage cans was negative. So in other words, I'm not talking about the specific volumes for only Bevcan South Africa. The overall market for beverage cans in the country was negative, and that includes the demand on all our competitors as well. So as a result, making sure we remain competitive, we have implemented further cost-saving initiatives. I think the team has done well there. We have reduced our overhead cost even further. We are in the process of restructuring one of the factories to take out further crews. That is in progress and proceeding in line with plans. Bevcan Nigeria, I think we need to report that we managed to debottle the the production line there even further. We are of the view that we can produce up to 1 billion cans on that line per year. And as a result of that, we do not see the need for any short-term CapEx investment there. I think any thoughts of a second line for the moment, I think we will be very careful before we invest in a second line. I think for the moment we are very well capitalized throughout the Bevcan business, and before we put in a second line there, I think we will wait for the market to grow quite a bit more. So yes, any idea for major CapEx there, I think we can push out a couple of years. If I then move on to the food business, the business has been characterized by lower volumes, as you know, due to a loss of a key customer during the second half of 2019. Clearly, the economy in South Africa is also weak. And as a result, the division has started implementing quite an aggressive rationalization program, basically looking at the consolidation of some production sites in order to reduce overhead costs. And we are very confident that although the business at the moment is still loss-making, we will be able to return that business to profitability. On the plastic side, we've managed to improve profitability despite lower market volumes, and that's been on the back of some restructuring, and I think the management team of the plastics business has done a particularly good job. On the paper side, our business in Zimbabwe, Nyoni, has remained strong. The demand has remained strong, but they did have some challenges in getting adequate supply of raw materials, mainly due to the liquidity shortage. And then lastly, our Cartons Nigeria business, the results will only be included for 4 months as it was sold in January 2020. I'm going to hand over now to Glenn that will talk you through the proceeds from the disposal of our businesses, etc.
Good afternoon to all and good morning to those overseas. The proceeds from the disposals, there are essentially three disposals that have taken place since we spoke last regarding the results to September 2019. And we'll deal with the first one being the Cartons Nigeria disposal that was approved by the Competitions Commission. All conditions have been met. The 29 million euros have been deposited into our Isle of Man bank account. So there's no risk of dollar shortages anywhere in Nigeria to get that cash back to us in Nigeria, in Isle of Man. So that's a good transaction, and that has been successfully completed. The glass transaction, which became effective on the 28th of February 2020, when all the suspensive conditions were fulfilled or waived, that is due to complete tomorrow with proceeds of approximately 1.5 billion expected tomorrow. What we will do with those proceeds is initially reduce rand-based debt. I think with the movement in the currency, I think the rand is probably oversold itself for the moment, and we wouldn't be looking to settle foreign debt with that. We will, however, immediately use the proceeds from the Cartons Nigeria disposal to settle the portion of the overseas debt that we have on that particular debt profile. What we have done with the Nampak Plastics Europe business, that transaction was concluded on the 13th of December 2019. In principle, the business was sold for a nominal amount of money. We have had to make 1 year's contribution towards the pension fund liability. And if I can remind you, that was a defined benefit pension fund liability, which we had not been able to deal with in previous periods in terms of disposal. We've managed to dispose of that business together with that liability. We had a balance sheet liability of approximately 500 million rand that will come off our balance sheet as a consequence of that transaction. In addition to that, we will avoid a capital expansion program there of approximately 600 million rand, and also avoid any further trading losses in that market. So I think that completes the trio of those disposals, and with expected proceeds of approximately 1.9 billion rand. In terms of the covenant relaxation, you know, the NAMPAC covenants are possibly susceptible to a sudden weakening in the rand versus the dollar when it happens late in the measurement period. How the covenants work is there are essentially two legs to the covenant. The first being net debt to EBITDA covenant, and the EBITDA is translated at the average exchange rate. The net debt is translated at the closing spot rate. If there's a dislocation between those two rates, you can get a temporary mismatch in the covenant. If the new spot rate that is the result at the end of a reporting period becomes the new average, it washes itself out in the future average that comes into that number. And there's a second covenant, which is the EBITDA interest cover, which is less susceptible to, I suppose, an exchange rate movement compared to the first one. In order to be prudent, we were concerned about the impacts of the Moody's rating on the 27th of March and what the impacts would be on the rand-dollar exchange rate, and engaged with our funders to build in a level of flexibility within those covenant ratios. And we have managed to get the banking partners in our revolving credit facility to relax the covenants from a net debt to EBITDA from a maximum of 3.0 times to 3.5 times for the March measurement period, and the EBITDA interest cover from a minimum of 4 times to 3.25 times. Now, the proceeds from the disposals will clearly go to reduce future interest costs, and those will not have yet benefited the income statement, with the proceeds having been received very late in the reporting period. In terms of the foreign exchange movements that the group is, you know, managing in the period, the RAND, if you have a look in the table that we published, on average has been 4% weaker than the comparative period for the prior year, and at a spot has been closed at 15.66 on the 29th of March, and we've seen significant weakening post that date. So these tables, we have got a note below it, indicate that due to weakening post this date, there will be further financial consequences as a consequence of that further weakening. It will benefit the translation of foreign operations where they're dollar-denominated earnings, and it will have an adverse effect on the translation of dollar-denominated debt at the reporting date. The Naira has been very constant during the period with no major movements. There has been a significant devaluation in the average exchange rate of the Kwanzaa, where that is weakened by 53.9% in the period and 31.6% from the closing spot rate at the end of September 2019. Clearly, there's been a significant move in the average rates for the Zimbabwe dollar, where those have moved from 2 Rand 54 or 2 Zimbabwe dollars to 54 to 16.54, and that has moved from 15.20 to 17.96 compared to September 2019. In terms of the capital expenditure program, the capital expenditure program remains tightly controlled. As we've demonstrated in the last couple of years, we've put a tight control over capital expenditure. Historically, we've had around about two-thirds of that being replacement capital expenditure, the balance of a third being expansionary. We have given guidance of between 600 and 750 million as a range, but we will be tightening that range for the rest of the financial year and will not be approving any further projects. And to the extent that we can, and conserve further cash in the period, we'll be doing that. Eric, over to you for the outlook.
Yeah, I think overall, if we go through the outlook, clearly, you know, there's it's very difficult to determine what is going to happen over the next couple of months in terms of demand. I think the whole world has got huge uncertainty around, you know,
how long this is going to last, how deep the recession will be, and how long it will take for consumer demand to return. And I want to be very careful to use the term return to normal. I think we might see a different level of normal, but it's clearly going to be very disruptive over the next couple of months. And thereafter, I think all of us will be in a very different place. But we are going to use this as an opportunity. I always say, you know, according to a well-known phrase, you know, don't waste a good crisis. That is clearly what our management team is going to do. We're going to make sure that we cut costs wherever possible. I think not just because we want to do, I think we will be forced to do so. And of course, thereafter, we'll be very careful to relax those control measures as the economy normalizes on the other side. But clearly a tough time. Glenn mentioned the level for CapEx. I want to put it on the table that even those levels, a very significant portion of that CapEx was the conversion of the line in Angola. So overall, almost half that amount relates to the conversion of the line in Angola, where the picture, of course, now has changed dramatically. But the reason I'm mentioning that is if you do any forecast going forward, clearly we're going to have massive focus on reducing CapEx. And for next year onwards, I think that number is going to be significantly lower. So clearly, we're going to have a massive focus on reservation of cash, whether that's for the next couple of months or the next period. And I think once things normalize thereafter, we will again look at how we expand into, you know, how we look at different opportunities. Clearly, we feel we have a very good footprint in Africa right now, despite the fact that at the moment conditions are severely constrained. And hence, once we normalize, we have enough cash again, we have brought our debt under control, etc. I think when we start looking at expansion again, it is likely that we will look outside of the continent of Africa. Clearly, before we've been constrained in terms of our technical agreements that limited us to trade for our beverage can and food operations in Africa, but we do not have that constraint anymore, and hence, once things normalize, we will probably look at opportunities in different parts of the market. I think that concludes sort of our summary of our trading update, so we are now going to allow for questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your phone. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star and then two. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. The first question we have is from Munira Kavaya from Nedbank. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Hello, Eric and Glenn.
Hi, Munira.
Thanks for the call. So I got a few questions from my side. The first one is on the relaxation of the covenants. So just to understand that outside of that, is there any other holidays that the bank is granting you guys?
Munira, there's not. I would expect to receive the proceeds tomorrow. But it's such a material number within our forecasting that one has factored these things into the equation on a prudent basis. There are no other relaxations.
Okay, I see. And then on the SA Bev cans, how much of your guys' volumes is alcohol?
Munira, if I talk top of my head, I would. And it's a rough guess. I think it's about half.
Half, okay. And are you seeing a slowdown in the CSD market already in SA? Or is it just too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. Keep in mind, the packs that we sell are generally what's termed immediate consumption packs. So I think it is fair to assume that very few people will go out planning to buy beverage cans unless it's for pantry stacking. So a lot of your immediate consumption demand in the short term or during the lockdown would be significantly reduced.
So you won't be running your lines full. You're going to reduce the capacity that you're running those facilities at.
That's correct. So at the moment, both our factories has got lines running. Clearly for, our Roslyn line that has got a very significant portion of its volume that's going to the alcoholic market. There's only one line running at the moment. And in Springs, we are only running product for our CSD and energy customers.
So are you guys planning on cutting any staff?
Just explain what you mean with that question.
So, in terms of cost cutting, you mentioned cost cutting. Is that linked to the labor force? Would you be planning on laying off workers?
Okay, so two parts to that question. So the first one, we've already reduced in Springs, where you've got three lines. As we discussed during our year end, we were looking at reducing the crewing from three crews or to crew three lines. We'll reduce that so there's only crewing for two lines, and then we will flex that labor between the three lines as and when the demand requires.
Okay, got it.
So then in terms of COVID, I think that will all depend on demand. Clearly, it will depend on how long this is going to carry on. At the moment, the policy we've implemented is that any workers that are working, clearly they get their normal pay. Any of the workers and more so office staff that can't work, that is working from home, that's per normal. But anybody else is at the moment on leave. And we will allow people to go into negative leave to a certain extent, but thereafter, once they leave run out, unfortunately, they will be on unpaid leave. We will, of course, also look at measures. First of all, depending on the impact, you see how many people is on unpaid leave, whether there's assistance we can give them. But at the same time, we will probably also have to look at our salary levels, and we will keep on adjusting that if need be after consultation with the relevant parties.
Okay. And then maybe just two more questions on Africa. Is there any talk of any lockdown for Angola and Nigeria?
Yes. So in Angola, there's not a lockdown at the moment. In Nigeria, they have already announced yesterday, a lockdown in the Ogun state, and that's where our beverage can factory is. So at this stage, we can still run, but and it's unclear what the exact rules of the lockdown are going to be, but we will probably still be able to supply our customers. In the Lagos state, they have something. They don't call it a lockdown. I think it's like a slowdown or something. Which has got some restrictions, but businesses can still run. So, and the same for Zimbabwe has just announced a 21-day lockdown as well. And interestingly enough, if you look at the regulations issued by government, they are almost identical to what was issued in South Africa. So the conditions would be very similar. And as a result, most of our business, in fact, as far as I know, all of them in Zimbabwe can keep on running, but clearly it will have an impact on demand.
Sure. Okay. Then the last question is on the liquidity. You mentioned that you've seen Nigeria tighten up. Maybe you can expand on that and give us your view on. So when I look at what the forward rate curve is pricing in for Naira, it's around 500. what do you guys think about that? And Glenn, for you, would there be a need to account for this as hyperinflationary?
Okay, before we get into the accounting, and you're going to upset Glenn heavily if you talk hyperinflation, this is,
okay,
I think, something everybody's still trying to get to terms to. But I think we're miles off that from the moment, but I'll allow Glenn to respond to that. So let's talk first about Nigeria. So clearly, the with the devaluation, or not the devaluation, the reduction in the oil price, clearly there's going to be significant pressure on the reserves from Nigeria. They'll probably go into a fairly sizable current account deficit. And I think, therefore, it is expected that the currency will go out. The question is not so much what it's going to do to the exchange rate, but more so what it's going to do to liquidity.
Mm.
Clearly, we still have a very decent volume of cans we're supplying there. And the question is going to be, how do we prevent a similar situation than what we had a couple of years ago, where the liquidity required us to fund the business from offshore? I think the difference this time around is that the currency is not pegged anymore. So, you know, the market rate should, or the normal demand, supply and demand should set market rates. At the same time, I don't think it is entirely a floating currency. We have already started seeing some tightening of the availability of dollars, and we're going to have to manage that very closely going forward. But clearly, we want to avoid a situation where we have to fund that from our offshore balance sheet, and we, if need be, we will cut back production, because what we find is to keep on running at the full pace when you've got the liquidity crunch, eventually the currency devalues and whatever profits you've made, you know, almost evaporate through currency devaluations. So, you know, we if liquidity is severely constrained, we will also cut back on the levels of production. Now, the next one is then, what about Angola? Now, clearly that's the one where we had the biggest trading income to protect before, and the highest volume, and therefore the biggest requirement for Forex, which we had to fund from offshore. I think, first of all, at the moment, our operation Angola has got, first of all, because of the declining volumes, they sit on very healthy stock of raw materials. We don't believe we need to buy any raw materials to the rest of the year to keep them going at current levels. So there will be virtually no requirement to fund the business in Angola at all. We, given the fact that they are now operating at near break-even levels, if we need to stop it for a period of time, we'll even do so. Although, as I indicated, there's definitely not a need to do that for, well, definitely not until the end of our year end. So,
Do you expect that business to go into losses? I mean, so because the situation's deteriorating now, and is that the expectation?
I don't want to speculate too much about where volumes are going to go. It is quite volatile. I don't want to go into that too much. What I can say, our team on the ground there has been extremely proactive and has cut back costs significantly. And at the moment, even at very low volumes, we reduced our fixed overhead dramatically. We had to lay off a number of people, so we run at a skeleton staff at the moment. So we are quite confident that we'll be able to protect that business as much as possible. I'm going to allow Glenn to respond to the hyperinflation.
Okay, thanks so much. Thank you.
Manira, just in terms of hyperinflation, to qualify for hyperinflation, you've got to have a cumulative inflation rate over a 3-year period of 100% or more.
Okay.
And and I don't think it's near that. And the functional currency in Angola is actually dollar. So the goods are actually priced in dollars. And so we wouldn't find ourselves in a hyperinflationary environment there.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks so much. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question we have is from James Tyman from Prescient. Please go ahead.
Go ahead, James.
It seems James' line is muted. The next question we have is from Anthony Hewitt from Investec. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Eric and Glenn. If I can, just ask for some clarity. What actually happens if the covenants are breached? So that's my first question. The second one is on your liquidity risk management, in the notes to your annual accounts in note 6.1, you talk about various liquid resources, which total almost 6 billion rand and an extend over the next 3 to 4 years. Can you explain how these liquid facilities that you are able to draw on, how they work, and you know, how you would be able to access them, and you know, what the terms or the constraints are around those? Thanks very much.
Sure. Anthony, technically, in terms of IFRS, if the computation of the covenant comes out at more than the predefined levels, one would have to disclose the long-term portion of any funding as short-term, because it would technically be a breach of the covenant. The banks would effectively have a right to, you know, call their money early under a breach situation. I mean, that is one of the reasons, because of the volatility in the exchange rate, we early engaged with our funding partners to manage that particular risk. In terms of liquid facilities, essentially we've negotiated a revolving credit facility agreement with a consortium of banks that is the utilization of which is linked to the you know, the funding that we've secured, and then within that you've got to manage the covenant. So, you know, we've got access to that amount of money as long as one is able to produce sufficient EBITDA just to cover both the legs of the covenants in the agreement. To the extent
okay.
that the,
yeah. Sorry,
the EBITDA, you obviously your ability to draw on that excess portion is limited.
Okay, so just to be very clear, you cannot draw on those liquidity facilities if you breach covenant.
Yeah, or if your drawing on those facilities would not be supported by the resultant covenant calculation. So you need
okay.
you need to utilize the funds to produce EBITDA. Basically, that's the message.
Sure. And just one final question. Just to be clear, you've got a payment of a capital repayment of, is it $115 million in May of this year?
Yes.
Okay.
So
right.
essentially what we've done there is part of that revolving credit facility, we created a what we call Facility E as an earmarked, dedicated, totally reserved facility for that repayment of $100 million. So we would fund $100 million out of that particular facility and $15 million from the proceeds that we offer our disposal. So that the available facilities to repay that position on that date.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for that clarity. Good luck, guys. Wish you all the best.
Thanks a lot.
The next question we have is from Brent from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, guys. Three questions from my side. If I can, I'll throw them all at you at the same time, if that's okay. So just in case I missed it, can you just explain or just clarify the relaxation of the debt covenants for the first half? Do the debt covenants, do they resort back to their previous values for the full year, or do they remain at the relaxed levels at the interim stage? That's my first question. Second question, my information is correct, Ulyman is shipped some of and just get a clarity on a couple of you guys. Do you guys see that as potential risk in the short term if you can't source material, particularly for the BFCAN operations? And then just my last question, specifically on Angola. If my understanding is correct, one of the issues in Angola was that as the Kwanzaa devalued, you guys in turn rolled that over to your customers, and effectively the pricing became more onerous. Can you maybe just provide a little bit of detail just in terms of how you guys are looking at pricing in Angola in order to re-inject some demand into your products? Thanks very much.
Thanks, Brent. So I think the relaxation of the covenant, I'm quickly going to leave to Glenn.
Right. From a covenant relaxation point of view, generally what the banks do in abnormal situations like this, they relax the covenant for the immediate measurement period, and they will revert back to the normal levels where the net debt to EBITDA would be set at 3 times as opposed to the relaxed position of 3.5 times, and the EBITDA interest cover would go to a minimum of 4 times as opposed to the relaxed 3.25 times. So, you know, with the significant proceeds that we're getting in from the disposal, there will be quite a significant impact favorably on the debt. So, you know, we'll manage it accordingly, and obviously manage capital expenditure and working capital in the second half will be critical.
Brent, you ask a question about Ullman. But your line just went dead there. Can you maybe just repeat the Ullman question?
Sorry, I'm not quite sure if my source of information is correct, but my understanding is that Ullman is shut down during this period, or some of their facilities. I just want to get clarity of whether you guys are getting sufficient raw material for the Bevcan operation.
Okay, so at the moment, remember, we have quite healthy stocks of raw materials. And as it stands right now, because we're not running all our facilities at the moment because of the non-supply of alcohol products, it means whatever raw materials we plan to consume during the next 3 months, the next 3 weeks, we will only consume half of it. So despite the normal safety stock we have in the system, our consumption will also go down, and therefore the demand on Ullman has dropped dramatically. So I'm quite sure they looked at what they have on their floor, as well as the revised demand forecast that we've given them, and I think it's the right thing for them to shut if they have done so. Obviously, they will also look to conserve cash as much as possible, but Ullman has always been very responsible. And if there's any supply issues, they would have let us know. And so far, we haven't heard anything for us to be worried about. They assured us they can supply us, so I'm not at this stage concerned about it. Your next question related to, you know, the devaluation of the Angolan currency and how does it impact on pricing. So clearly, you know, a US dollar price is wonderful to protect your price, but in the end, what is more important is whether consumers can actually pay that price and whether your demand is going to remain intact. So in Angola, after this significant devaluation, we did take we had a look at the price, so we did pass through quite a significant price increase to our customers to stimulate demand. We've also taken a part of that decrease and put it into a marketing fund to market cans in the country, and we are busy with quite an extensive marketing campaign in Angola to stimulate demand and assist customers in their own marketing activities. But clearly, it did result in a reduced margin. Does that answer your question?
Great, guys. Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. We have a follow-up question from Munira.
Sorry, guys. I forgot to ask one thing, the debt. So I noticed that you guys have chosen to prioritize paying down local currency debt over USD debt. Mm. Glenn, you made a comment about the rand being undervalued. Or how do you arrive at that conclusion? And do you feel it's in the best interest of the company to go that route? Thanks.
Manera, what we it's a very good question. I mean, what we've watched over time is that, you know, where there's risk off on emerging markets, the rand takes a beating quite significantly, and then as life settles down a little bit, it tends to come back a bit. You know, one doesn't quite know what the impacts of COVID are on emerging markets in the long term. My point of view that I'm trying to get across is that, you know, to buy dollars with that lump sum all at once with a weakened exchange rate, I don't think would be prudent. We would first look to settle the rand debt. It still has given us the capacity to settle the dollar-denominated debt, so it remains our very clear intention to de-risk the balance sheet further. But I think possibly over time, the currency might settle a little bit as opposed to the peaks of just after Moody's announcement of a downgrade.
Okay.
Manera, if I can just add to that, obviously we consulted quite wide with our banking partners and advisors, and the general view is that it would be unwise to settle significant US dollar debt at the current rand dollar rate. As Glenn pointed out, normally there's an overreaction to the panic, and the rand goes to a spike. There is an expectation that will come back. If not, we do not. If we're wrong, we don't expect that it will devalue significantly from where it is right now. Clearly, after the downgrade on Friday, which we expected, there's been some level of reaction. But we do believe that in the short term it will come back. And hence, at that point in time, we will have the opportunity to settle U.S. dollar-denominated debt. But at the moment, we are trying to keep that those funds available, and we don't want to crystallize that position or that loss right now. But clearly, if that remains, then we'll have to relook at it.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Jose Huber from Citi. Please go ahead. Jose, you can go ahead, sir.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi. Good afternoon, Glenn and Eric. Just three quick questions from my side. I think the first question, I just want to understand the magnitude of potential FX losses. Obviously, in the context of the devaluation in Zimbabwe, it's typically very difficult to forecast such numbers. So if you can just maybe give us an indication there, that's my first question. And number two, how big are the restructuring costs within DIF Food that you expect to come through in FY20? And then lastly, with regards to your debt covenants, I'm trying to understand how come your debt is not ring-fenced. I mean, you obviously you've got U.S. dollar-denominated debt, and also you've got local debt.
Okay. I think, first of all, Glenn, do you want to respond to the potential size of FX losses?
Yeah. To the extent that there are in Zimbabwe dollar denominated liabilities external to the group, we would have to account for foreign exchange losses on those numbers, and those we'll compute at the end of tomorrow, and we'll report on those at the final closeout. The Angolan position, there will be certain monetary items that have also had to be translated in those positions. So we'll actually talk to those as well at that point in time. The translation will depend on whatever the closing rate is at the end of tomorrow, being the last, obviously, the closing date for our half year. And you know, whatever the cash positions are in that period. There may be positions where we've been able to externalize certain cash between positions, and we will then work out whatever the closing net position is and translate there. So the valuations are primarily at this point in time probably sitting in two jurisdictions, and that would be Bevcan, Angola, and in Zimbabwe. The Naira has remained pretty constant.
Well, see, does that answer your question, sir?
Sorry, yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Sean Grant from Mazi Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good day, gents. Just two questions on covenants, if I may. So you renegotiated up to 3.5 temporarily. But when you get back to the 3, does the 3 stay there for the duration, or is there a step down in the covenant going forward? In other words, do you have to grow your EBITDA over the duration of the gearing that you've got on balance sheet? And then just the second question, and you did allude to it, I mean, you basically have to translate your balance sheet at spot and EBITDA at the average. I mean, I know this is an unusual set of circumstances, but I mean, you know, it just strikes me that there must be a better way of striking a covenant where you don't have the currency mismatch.
Yeah, okay, if I can answer that. You know, the covenant is measured at two particular closing points in time. So the first is the 31st of March, and the other one's the 30th of September every year. So yeah. In between those periods, one utilizes to manage working capital and, you know, fund transactions. But it's a critical point of those 2 points. So it will go from the 3.5 times back down to 3 times. Now, we did obtain a relaxation in the covenant at September 2019 and didn't need it. So I think it's just a little prudence that we apply in our financial management, because it depends on what that closing spot rate is. If I can remind you, in the history, when our former president got rid of our finance minister, Mr. Nene, over a very short space of time, it went out by 3 rand. Now it's got a high level of dollar denominated debt, and why we negotiate these relaxations is just to build into the calculation any kind of sudden external shock that could happen in the numbers. So there won't be a phase to skip down. It goes down to that point. And, you know, if the circumstances are such at the end of the September period where there is an issue, you know, we've got good relationships with the banking partners. We will discuss with the banking partners, you know, the situation that faces us at that point in time. But I think, you know, one must recognize that a 2 billion rand inflow, or there and thereabout, is going to make a significant improvement to the debt profile.
No, so I get that, but I'm talking, so I understand for this financial year, but over the next 3 years, there isn't a step down to get to, say, 2 or 2.5 times. It remains at 3.
It remains at 3, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And then just in terms of the way the covenant's negotiated, I mean, we have had many, many discussions on whether we should be having the income statement and balance sheet translated at the average rates. I mean, typically the banks, you know, stand firm, and this is across 7 banks in the consortium, that they want the debt at spot. So it is what it is, and we have to manage accordingly. And the point to make is that if that spot rate becomes the new average, so let's assume 18 Rand becomes the new exchange rate, the dollar-denominated earnings stream within the results will be a bit higher. But there's a bit of a lead lag in this formula that one just has to be practical about.
And Glenn, just last one before I go. The functional currency of the Nigerian business, is that dollar or is that Naira?
It is dollar.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, the pricing mechanisms there are all set on dollars.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then 1. The next question we have is...
Sorry, can I just respond to one more question? We failed to answer Brent's last question. He asked, let me just see. In fact, sorry, it was Corsi asked whether what's the size of the restructuring cost in the food. It's going to be quite a sizable number, probably in the order of 50 million rand for the first half of the year, and potentially a similar amount for the second half, although the second one is still very uncertain. It will depend on the level of restructuring.
Exactly right. And then, Erica, I don't think we answered Corsi's question about the debt covenants and the ring fencing. Just to advise everybody, we have two treasuries, one that runs the South African operations and one that runs the offshore operations. And the procurement and treasury business is located in the Isle of Man. It's got a separate dollar-denominated facility, and that's why there are two facilities, and they're not commingled. Essentially, what we will be looking to do, and we've got a particular pretty efficient structure to do it, is utilize the glass proceeds to reduce some of the drawdown on those dollars at the time.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, next question.
The next question we have is from Kwame Andri from KOA Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, guys. How are you doing? I've got two quick questions. The first one is back on the debt again. Naturally, you're going to receive a substantial inflow from your sale of assets. But if we see a marked decline in your EBITDA, which looks like the case, particularly 6 months out, you will probably be breaching the covenant again at 3x. Is there any long-term plan to deal with these, your debt level, or you intend to trade yourself out of the problem? The second question I've also got is on leases. So a few years back, you did your sale and leaseback agreement. In terms of the new accounting standards, IFRS 16, if I remember correctly, leases will now have to be capitalized. Will the corresponding liability that comes along with the capitalization of leases be included in your debt for covenant calculations, or will that be separate? Thank you.
All right. just in terms of the debt, let's just do the second one that's easier. You are right, it's IFRS 16. We have specifically spoke that out of the RCF agreement with the banks, so that does not qualify as interest-bearing debt in terms of the covenant calculation. So there's no impact in terms of the covenant. In terms of the potential decline in EBITDA, I think, you know, Eric and I are looking at all the forecasts with the operation, at various scenario plans. We are, I think if you step back and look internally, Nampak is pretty well capitalized from a fixed asset point of view, property, plant and equipment, and there's no really major long-term big capital items that we need to spend. So I think internally one can, you know, turn off the taps quite strongly on the property, plant and equipment expenditure and hone in even more tightly on working capital. Now, the combination of those two is expected to result in a further release of cash that will, is, you know, be used to manage any potential pressure on an EBITDA number.
Okay. Just, I've got one last question. On the pension liability, I think on your balance sheet date, the last one, you had about 900 million rand, and you said that 500 million has disappeared or has left with the sale of the UK plastics business. Where does the additional 400 million or the balance 400 million or pension liability, where does that come from?
Kwame, the number at the end of last year was 924 million, and that relates to the post-retirement medical aid liability for South Africa only. Because
okay.
The African liabilities of Nampak Plastics Europe were shown as part of IFRS 5 as a discontinued operation, that pension fund liability was sitting in liabilities held for sale. So out of the system as that business is closed out of the numbers in March this year. So
okay.
It's taken almost the liability of 1.5 billion down to around 924. And I think a further benefit is that the one-third component of that liability that was exposed to a potential weakening in the rand versus the pound is no longer a risk in the group balance sheet.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Jonathan Hearing. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. How are you doing? Just okay. Quickly, obviously you can see where the share price is trading at the 1.20 level. When would you believe that the company would be reinstating dividends in the foreseeable future, perhaps?
Jonathan, no, I don't think it's going to be short term. I think we are in a very different space right now. So as we mentioned before, I think our medium term objectives has remained the same. As we said at year end, first of all, we want to pay off dollar debt. Thereafter, we might want to consider a share buyback, especially at these levels. Thereafter, resume a dividend. But clearly at the moment, while there's still the risk of the covenant hanging over our head, we will definitely first want to gear down the balance sheet, make sure that our funders are comfortable where we are, and only thereafter will we look at resuming the dividend. So I think under current circumstances, a dividend is still quite some distance off. I think short-term, pay down debt, thereafter, look at a share buyback if we have the cash.
Thank you.
I think just to add to that, we've considered, and I think we've been asked by many shareholders and analysts, if there would be a once-off special dividend. We have not thought that to be a prudent approach. We'd rather, if we went a route of returning capital to shareholders, look at a sustainable benefit to the share price in doing the share buyback at these levels, because that will manage the denominator in the share price going forward, as opposed to a once-off payment that has the share trading cumulative and immediately it's paid, it goes negative.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Boipelo Rabotata from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Just one question from me, and it's with regards to your contract that's coming to an end next year with AB InBev. Are you still confident that you'll retain most of that contract?
So, just to clarify, so that contract where we have 100% of the AB InBev volume comes to an end at the end of March next year. We are already in discussions with AB InBev. And I can't comment on the progress on there, but clearly we are confident that we should retain most of that volume. I think it's highly unlikely we'll retain all of it, in other words, 100%. And quite frankly, I don't think we necessarily want to retain 100%. I think it will be good for some volume to be going to our competitors, but at the same time, that will fill up their lines with volumes where, it is some of the lowest prices in the market. I'm not convinced that our competitors necessarily want to fill up their lines with those volumes. Does
thank
that
you.
Answer the question?
It does, thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you. The final question we have is from Mbasa from Mazi Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Glenn and Eric. Just one question for me on clarification of the covenant, just with regards to the cash that gets included in the calculation of the covenant. So with in Angola, and if there are any conditions in Nigeria, should anything change?
Right. In terms of the cash that's included, the cash in Nigeria is included, and there are no conditions in the covenant related to Nigeria. There are conditions where the cash in Zimbabwe is excluded, and there's a formula that it comes into play for Angola. But I think, if you have a look at the table that we've produced and we've consistently demonstrated to the market, I think you've seen very, very good cash extraction out of the Angolan market. and the cash balances are down at pretty low levels. And as Eric indicated early on in this discussion, a significant portion we've still got bonds for. So that hedging program has proved very, very beneficial over the period. And to the extent that we continue on that basis, we do. So there's no adjustment for Nigeria at all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. The next question we have is from Chris Logan from Opportune. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, guys. Thanks very much. Obviously, very tough times. With that in mind, you know, historically, NAMPAC's been well known to pay top dollar in terms of employee costs. So much so that, you know, often you sell a business and then to someone else and they take it over, reduce the employee costs, and it becomes very unprofitable. Are you addressing your employee cost issue? And I'm not just talking about in terms of a headcount reduction, but in terms of no increases or decreases, because this has been a long-term problem. That's the first question, if I may.
So, Chris, thanks for that question. So, yes, we are looking at that. Of course, that includes, you know, there's a requirement for consultation, but all those options are being looked at the moment.
Okay. That's good news. And then just on the CapEx, sorry, the line broke up a couple of times, but did I hear you correctly that you're not going to proceed with that second line in Nigeria? And then I think I heard you say that your future CapEx will be outside of Africa when it does occur. Did I get that right?
Chris, first of all, let's talk about the Nigerian line. So the Nigerian line, as we said, we managed to increase the throughput on that line to allow us to do up to 1 billion cans, which means there's still quite a bit of headroom on that line. So clearly, once we get to full utilization, we will not immediately put in a second line. And let me give you an example. So for instance, let's say we get to a point where we sell 1 billion cans at full utilization. At 1.1 billion cans, I think it's still too early to put in a second line, given the fact that our competitor there has got two lines already. And because if you put in a second line, that line, what the utilization would be so low that I don't think it would make sense. So we will hold off until there's reasonable utilization of a second line before we put another line in there. And the simple reason we want to do that, you know, given where the African economies are at the moment, I think it would give us a better return for the related risk if we actually rather invest in a facility elsewhere in the world. So we haven't taken a decision like that at the moment. There is nothing specific, but I think in principle, we say that our investment in Africa, we are probably over-invested there right now, and therefore we would like to spread our risk base by also looking at other parts of the world where you have either much bigger markets for example, beverage cans, and therefore the risk of investment might be lower, although it will probably also be at lower margins.
Lower trading margins, but am I right? You know, if you look at the net margin after all the forex losses and impairments and everything, you know, that trading margin is a bit of a pie in the sky margin.
Yeah, Chris, as we pointed out before, our trading margin is specifically the margin that relates to trading in country. And as we define our financial statements, that excludes any losses that are abnormal to the trading. So it's not just abnormal in terms of the occurrence, but also whether it's material in terms of the size or in terms of the nature. So there are multiple things that qualify a loss as abnormal. But you're absolutely right. When we look at the net margin on these returns,
We do not only look at trading income. That's only one of the measures we look at. We obviously take into account all the losses, including foreign or devaluation losses. And on that basis, yes, it might be that with a lower risk in some of the other parts of in the world, the net margin might not necessarily be lower. It might even be higher.
Yeah, exactly. And you seem to be moving in that line. But thanks very much. Good luck with those moves.
Thanks, Amalia.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Iaz from Investec Asset Management. Please go ahead. No, can you hear us? It seems like
hello. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. It's Laz here from Investec Asset Management on 91. So I have a question on Nigeria, just as a follow-up. There was a line, sort of second-hand line, that was acquired and that was aimed for the Deaf Foods opportunity in Nigeria. How far are you in implementing that line, or are you taking a break from that opportunity? And then secondly, are there any major set of contracts either on Deaf Food or Bev cans that are coming up for renegotiation in the next 12 to 24 months that you can please run us through? Thanks.
So the first question, the line that was acquired for the opportunity in Nigeria, so that project is currently on hold. So at the moment, there was limited capital spent on that, but a big portion of that, the cost of that project will obviously be to move it to Nigeria and put it in there. At the moment, we've taken the view to put that project on hold. We're not going to spend any further cash at the moment on it. We're going to wait and first see what the developments are in Nigeria, but at the moment, we're not going to spend any further cash on that project, and it is on hold. Then, in terms of any other major contracts that's coming up, I think the biggest contract we have at the moment, as we discussed, is the Bevcan contract with AB InBev coming up next year. But in the meantime, there are multiple other contracts coming up. That's a regular occurrence. There's some of these contracts are annual. We, for instance, have in Nigeria also a contract with AB InBev coming up. In fact, in 2 days' time, so that's clearly already been negotiated. We can't give the details of that through yet. But in all these contracts, I think you can expect all the normal negotiations. It, you know, the outcome will depend on the availability of spare capacity in the market, whether people are full or not. So it will be competitive. Where there's spare capacity, generally you will find margins to come under pressure. But at the same time, sometimes we will win volume and sometimes we will lose. I think that's quite normal. And as we said in South Africa, with the amount of spare capacity there, we've always said we will have further margin, or sorry, not margin necessarily, market share loss. But there is a bottom limit to that, and at the moment we find that for our competitors, it is getting significantly more difficult to take volume away from us. So that's I think all we can say at this point in time.
And then just maybe before I give the line to others, are you able to give us an indication of capacity utilization in Nigeria given, you know, you have obviously debottlenecked your operations there, and equally maybe just some idea of the capacity utilization in Angola, please.
Okay, so in rough numbers, I think you can say in Nigeria we're now roughly probably just north of 70%. So there's quite a bit of headroom that we still have available. In Angola, it is extremely low. So obviously we have two lines. both those lines are capable of producing up to 1 billion cans, although there are more sizes in that country. So we've also, at the time of converting the existing steel line to aluminium, we've given it some other size capability. But right now, I would be guessing, but if you look at the combined capacity of those two lines, we're probably sitting on about a 20% utilization. So it is extremely low. And as you can imagine, the steel line that we're converting, we have stopped that project largely because of the COVID pandemic. But you know, there's no reason to rush that project. So you know, for all practical purposes, we've got one line permanently shut at the moment. We've removed the labor from it, and even if we need a second line for in the short term, we can run it with the crew from one line. But at the moment, volumes are extremely low.
Thank you very much.
So that was our final question. So that was our final question. Would you like to make any closing comments?
Yes. I think thanks for all those questions. Clearly, it's a extremely challenging period that we go through. But at the same time, you know, we've already factored all these things into our forecast model. So we've got a very good idea what the pressures on the business is going to be. I think we have a clear idea what the funding requirements are going to be. We're obviously having discussion with our funders, and I think we've had very good conversations with them. They've been very supportive during this whole process. But clearly, in the end, you know, we need to make sure that we're going to make the business work. As I said, you know, at the same time, this is a crisis, but let's not waste a good crisis. So we're gonna try and make sure we use this opportunity to cut as deep as possible into our cost base. We will address, I think, permanently some of our cost aspects and that are structural in nature. And we're gonna make sure that we reserve cash in the short term to get through this crisis. You know, we do not know how deep this is going to go, but at the moment, I think we've got a very focused management team. And sadly, in a lot of the areas of our business, we are doing much better at the moment. I said before that you know, we thought we were exiting the perfect storm. We were just dealing with some of the aftermath of that storm. It looks like the entire world is in a new storm. So, you know, let's stay away from terms like perfect storm. Thanks for the support. Thanks for very good questions. And we certainly gonna make sure that we get through all of this. But I think in all your own businesses, at the same time, I guess you're gonna be dealing with very similar issues. And we would like to wish all of you the best of luck in dealing with it.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your line.